Thank you. Vision casting and goal setting is an art form. And so tonight we're going to stand in front of an easel like this, your life, and we're going to start drawing something. And some of you have an idea of what you want it to look like, what you want your future to look like. It's not going to look like the circle of life. There you go. But you have an idea of what you want, and so you're going to go after that. But what happens is often we stand in front of it and we go, I don't know where to start. I don't know what to do. I don't know what colors. So we have people on the other spectrum that they don't even know what it looks like. Not only do they not know where to start, they don't even know what they want. So this workbook has been designed to help you get closer to your dream life, to help you get closer to your what we would call your preferred future of what it looks like. I've designed the workbook, the exercises, and the teaching in order to move you closer into the life you really want to live. And without the words that you're going to put down in this book, it's just a dream. It's just an I wish or I hope. What happens with a dream is it just kind of sits there and it bugs you and it can kind of be covered up by being busy and doing everything else. But when you put it into vision, it's putting your dream into words. So we want to put our dream into words. We're going to connect it with goals and then we're going to connect it with habits. That's why this first night we talk about vision instead of just about goals. Because you can have a lot of goals, and some of you might have that. Every year you set goals. Every quarter you have goals. You make those goals. You reach those goals. But then you're like nowhere closer to your dream. So we want to aim those goals specifically at vision, which is articulated dreams. And honestly, I wrote this, but I don't know anything in here that you're actually supposed to write down except for what I teach. All the exercises, they're just specific to you. They're not for anybody else. In fact, I was thinking of it that everything in there should fit you. Hey, Krisha, can you do me a favor? Can you try on that coat? It kind of fits, right? Do you think she would wear it? Think she'd buy it for herself? You think she likes it? Can I have it? Bradley, can you try on this coat for me? You have to eat dinner. I'll hold that for you.
Thank you.
Here, I'll let Ray hold it for you. That looks better. Let me see your arms. Doesn't quite fit. Oh, no. Okay. But he could wear that, though, right? He maybe even could have worn it 5 or 6 or 7 years ago when he was a kid. He could have worn it later on, okay? Now, Rhea, will you try that coat on?
Yes.
Okay, that doesn't fit at all. All right, take it off. It's obvious it doesn't fit you. All right, so when you write and when you're doing your exercises, I want you to think just about you. I'm not going to roll down my sleeves. This is actually my coat, and it fits me. And when you put on somebody else's coat, it's uncomfortable. And even if it's comfortable, when you look a little bit deeper, you reach into the pocket. Those are some networking cards. And you pull out your goals. I have 3 goals here. Lose 30 pounds. Write a Strength Finders workbook. Get credentialed by ICF. Does that mean anything to anybody else want to do that?
Lose 30 pounds.
Well, okay, there you go. Okay. Good. Boy, well taken. So what if Rhea tried to put on this coat? Ray is right here to lose 30 pounds. That'd be awful. That'd actually be bad for her health. So you think about that. If she tried to write a Strength Finders workbook, something she could do a workshop on and help people, do you think she could do it? She could eventually. She'd have to learn a lot. She'd have to grow a lot. She'd have to get credentialed. She'd have to get some credentials in coaching. And see, when goals, we usually so often look at our neighbor and see what their goals are, what they've achieved. I want that. We look at a ministry. I want that. We look at an artist. I want to be that kind of artist. I want to have a life like somebody else has, and I'll go try to fit that life into my life. But today what we want to do is we want to find things that fit us. And so with this workbook, it's not one size fit all. It might be right for you to lose weight, but the way you do it and the style in which you do it in has to be set for you. It has to be give value for you. And only you can determine what you're going to put down in this workbook, okay? All right, so turn to page 1. It's got a bunch of circles on it. It says on top of it, how many can you see? All the page numbers are on the right and the right-hand side page and the left on the left-hand side page. We're not going to go exactly in order. But we're going to start right here. So this is what I want you to do. You see the circles there. I want you to take, I'm going to give you 2 or 3 minutes. I'm going to time it. What I want you to do is I want you to draw something for each circle that's there, okay? I'm going to give you the first two if you want to draw. A button, which I just lost, and a penny or a quarter, okay? All right, so I want you to draw as many as you can, as fast as you can. All right, go. All right, that's about a minute. Are you done? Oh.
Did you say, we had to quit?
All of them?
No, no, I want you to keep going. Keep going. That's about a minute. Do as many as you can.
Different stuff, right?
Just as many as you can. You can't put 5 pennies. Yeah. Well, I guess you can, but we'll talk about that. Okay, I have about 40 more seconds. When I say stop, everybody has to stop. You're not being graded. Maybe you are by your neighbor, but not by me. Nobody else has to know what you're drawing, just you, okay? So don't worry about what you're drawing. All right, go ahead and stop. Put your pens down. All right, so how many circles were you able to use? How many used 10? How many did 10? Or more? I'm sorry. How many did 10 or more? How many did 15 or more? Keep your hands up. 15 or more. 16 or more. 17 or more. So 15, 16, 17. So that's on the high end. All right, do you think it means something if you just did a few or if you did a lot? Do you think it means something about you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, think about that. Everything that you do means something about you. The way you're dressing, the way you do your hair, the way you live your life. It might not be conscious of what you're doing and why you're doing it, but there's reasons we do the things that we do. There's reasons why we spend the time the way we spend our time. So, did anybody here use 2 circles to create 1 thing? Did anybody else break a rule? What'd you do, like a 3-wheel bike or a 4-wheel bike? Did you draw a car?
I did a car and a snowman.
It's a car and a snowman. So you use 5 right there, or 7. I'm not sure which one. Okay. Did anybody do like a penny, a nickel, a dime, a quarter, a silver dollar? You did a bunch of that? Okay. So a couple of you did that. All right. So now these are just potentials of what these could mean. So if you produced a whole bunch, let's say 7, 8, 10, 12, 15 of all distinct, and you could have gone on had you more time, you may have difficulty singing out one vision to follow this next year. One vision per each of the areas we're going to talk about of the 7 areas. You may have difficulty, and you may say to yourself, I have too many things I want to do. I have too much vision. I have too many things I want to get done. And you might have to need to compress and edit and focus your vision on just a few. That might be your struggle. So if you just got a few, like it's say under 7 or 8, and you would have struggled if I would have given you 2 more minutes, you couldn't have added more than 1 or 2 more. Or you did penny, nickel, dime, a button, or a hubcap and a tire and a wheel. You did something in categories. You might be on the opposite end of that spectrum in that you might have difficulty expanding your vision. Your vision might be something like, I want this much more of what I already have right now. I want to go after something I can already think I can get next year. That will be my vision for my life. All right? Vision is a distance thing. It's a big thing. And it's not based on anything you currently have or who you are right now or what you think you can do. Vision comes out of your heart, and it's attached to your heart, and it comes out in that way. And so in the next 3 nights, this night and the next next two Wednesday nights, you're going to be challenged to see something great about yourself. That's the challenge. See something great about yourself. And to confirm it and to clarify it. Whether you struggle with having a vision or you struggle with I have too much vision, they're both kind of the opposite ends of the same coin. They're the same thing. They produce the same thing, lack of movement towards a life that you'll really love. Okay? So this circle that you have that represents your life is just unique to you. Nobody else needs to know what it is. They eventually do, but you're the only one that's supposed to see it out of that circle. You have things. Did anybody else do a snowman? You have things out of your life, that these categories of your life, these areas of your life that you have, it's your very own life to build and life to do. And so right here, I just want to talk a little bit about the fear factor. I've been using this a little bit. So here's us. Let's say here's you. This guy does not need to lose 30 pounds, that's for sure. So here we are. I have no goals. I have too many goals. I have no vision. I have too much vision. And you probably wouldn't say I have no goals, or you probably wouldn't say I have no vision, but that's sometimes what it feels like when you start writing or when you start trying to clarify what it is. And so what we're doing, we're standing here today. I have some dreams, and we're looking over here to our ideal concept or our preferred future. This is what I want my relationships to look like. This is what I want to feel like. I want my health to be like. This is what I want my financial situation to be like. This is what I want my job to be like. This is what I want my ministry to look like. And it's a preferred future that's in our heart that we hope we have. And a lot of us draw back and don't go after that future because what we've done is we've taken a step out here and we've set some goals, and that big old car that Erin drew out of her four tires comes, and if it doesn't hit us, it at least makes us jump back onto this side and say, I'm not going to try that again. I'm not going to date again. I'm not going to get married again. I'm not going to start anything again. I'm not going to be involved with a group of people again. I'm not going to go into ministry again. All of these things that we have, I'm not going to try to go on a diet. I'm not going to try to save money. I'm not going to try to grow in this area. And what we have to do, we have to endure the contradiction or live in the tension that is between here and here. And one of the ways we do that is when we set our vision of this is what we look like, this is what we want it to look like, our goals give us safe passage, step by step, over into this other side. All right? So goals are really important. Now, when we come around to January 1st, the end of December, there'll be a lot of people on television and the news saying, you got to write goals. Other people will be, goals don't work. Goals, writing goals and writing a vision for your life is the singular best way to change your life over time. It's the best way. The last night, the third night, we're going to talk about habits and what habits do. Habits inch us out onto this thing. So we don't even have to take a big step to get there. We can use habits to make us move forward more and more and more and more. And habits over time, consistent right habits in the right direction, meeting the right goals in the right direction of the vision for our life, actually gets us to change. And we can change over and over and over again in so many different ways. All right? Okay, so the fat tire exercise is your next one. That's on page 3. This is all to generate in us a way to think about our life, a way to assess our life, a way to think differently about vision and goals, and a way to clarify and capture in words, written down, what we want. Have you ever spoken with somebody and you get to a point in your conversation where you have like this moment where you share what you really want and you just want to cry? I never do. Of course. I walked into Smash Burger the other day, and I was waiting for Jim, and he wasn't there yet, and there's nobody there. About 11:45, there's this girl, and she's got some brightly colored stuff in her hair. She's got a Marilyn Monroe ring. She's got a giant tattoo. And I just say, what's, man, you're super colorful today. What's going on there with the tattoo? She said, oh, that's my tattoo. It's for my sister. I said, well, I don't like any of my siblings that much to put a tattoo like that on my arm. And we laughed and we talked just for seconds. And I was like, well, why your sister? And she said, well, she died. I was like, and immediately it's like we had a connect right there. And it's like she didn't want to break that connect, that thing right there. And I was just having a conversation when she said my sister died, and it came out of my mouth that my brother died when I was 18. I thought I was going to cry right there. We were both tearing up because I expressed something that was deep to me, a longing to have brothers, a longing to have a future with that guy. And we talked about what it means to lose, that you lose nieces and nephews, you lose time and dinners, and right there at the cash register. And so we have those moments that we've shared a little bit of our dream, a little bit of ourself. And that's really what we want to do here, that for you not to share with us all at one time, but to find those things, those points that make you go, oh, I wish I had that in my life. I wish I had that type of friendship. I wish I had that type of ministry. I wish I had that type of job where I didn't watch 3 hours of TV every night, but I did something else that I was loving, I was engaged in. All right, so the circle of life, which I call the fat tire of life, is about 50 or 60 years old. So what I want you to do, there's just different points here. One says family and friends, and there's 7 of them. And don't look at your neighbors, because I want you to be honest, okay? 2, 4, 5, 6, 7. And this here says my family is not where I want it to be. And so this could be very low, extremely high. And I just want you to circle in which one on each of these, spokes, which one represents your life, okay? Go ahead and take a minute and do that. Don't think a lot about it. You'll have opportunity to go back and look at it and redo it. Be as honest as possible as you can with yourself. All right, you got about 20 more seconds, 25 more seconds. Fill in those circles. Okay, so then this is what I want you to do with your circle. What I want you to do, I want you to start with any dot, and I want you to connect your circles. Just like that, okay? Does anybody have a tire that's not have a flat somewhere in that tire, is not low air? Does anybody have a tire, don't raise your hand, that looks like this? I'm going to tell you, nobody has a tire that looks like that. Because once your tire begins to look like that, you begin to expand your tire. You begin to expand your circle of influence of what you want to produce, of who you want to be in your life. So when you look at this tire, the cool thing about what we do with these 7 areas of writing vision and setting goals for these 7 areas, specifically these 7 areas, is once you start breathing life into one area, if you had a hole right there, and this was an inner tube, a floating tube down the Guadalupe or on your bike, if you start blowing air into that part right there, what's going to happen to the rest of your tire? It gets bigger. Does just one part of your tire expand, or does all of your tire expand?
All
expands. And so when we look at it, we look at wholeness of life, not just setting, I want more money. I want one thing, singular, that's it. It's a fullness of life. And if we go after proper health, or proper finances, if that was a low number, if we go after those things properly and begin to learn about ourselves, design it for our life that we desire, everything else gets better in our life. Everything else gets better in our life. So we want to look at that, and we want to do that. So did you know that when you begin to exercise and eat right, that over time, if you keep it up consistently, that you will probably budget your money better? Did you know when you get on a budget and you learn the value of self-control and making good choices, and I don't have to be that person that's always in debt, that other areas in your life automatically change? There's a conversion that comes along when we live intentionally. There's a convergence in what we are when we begin to go after things that we deeply desire, and then we start enlisting all these other areas of life to help us to maintain or to reach and maintain the vision of that life and the vision of that area. And next week I'll talk some about how these seven areas of my life, not all go together, but it's pretty interesting when I think of family or play and how I've been able to have work and ministry and even the mental part, even what I study, all kind of converge and live intentionally towards the same kind of life, because I have a preferred future of what I want my life to look like. And I was sharing with Jim the other day that when I was in my 20s, I was a yard guy. I mowed yards. I mowed Sweetwater Christian School with a hand mower and electric weed eater for like 2 years before I bought a riding mower. I was a high school dropout. I was going to college part-time. I worked UPS in the winter times. I did Regis, R-G-I-S, you know, from 10 o'clock at night to 6 in the morning doing inventory control. I stocked shelves. I called Gallup poll people, things like that, all for jobs right after I graduated. And I began to work at that church about 6 years in that school, and I became a teacher. And I started as an aide. And then I left there to go start a school in the inner city. And in the in-between time, I got a master's in education. So I got a degree in communications, got a master's in education. Guess who came back to be the administrator of that very school that I used to mow the yard at? Yeah. I know something about vision and setting goals. And the part of the problem was I didn't have intentional goals, but I knew I didn't want to work with my hands all my life. I knew that I wanted to do something with the living, with my brain. I wanted to engage my brain. I love school. Lots of different reasons why you drop out and things like that. But there's something that there's a lifestyle design that we can have, that we can hope for, and that we can move towards. And this fat tire, so when we have seven areas of seven vision setting areas, these are the seven areas that's on your tire there, on your fat tire. When you do some meditation on seven areas, when you go home tonight, it's these seven areas. You don't have to do it tonight, but this week. Okay? Any questions so far? We are going to have a question and answer session. Any questions so far that you have? Anything you need further explained? We'll go back to the iceberg principle. I know we're covering a lot of material, but this is all just to move us forward. All right, so page 6, the million-dollar question. You only have 1 minute to write this down. I want you to write it down without thinking. Look at me. Don't write it yet. You've heard it before. If you had a million, if I said tonight when everybody leaves, everybody gets $1 million, what do you do? All right, go ahead and write it down. Oh, no, I don't know. What if I get a wrong answer? The only wrong answer is somebody else's answer, not your answer. But if you... All right, 22 more seconds. Ten, nine, eight, seven, six, five, four, three, two, one. All right, go ahead and stop. That's something you can go back and work on, but that's kind of a big picture question. Here's the thing we have to remember. We don't need $1 million to start to do what we want to do. You don't need $1 million. You don't need $1 million to start to do what you want to do. You can go this week and start to do something towards what you just wrote down. So, did you know that most people don't care if they have $1 million? Most people don't care. They don't work for it. They don't save it. They don't think about it. What we want, what the majority of us want, is a life that we can live, that we think we can live only if we have $1 million. We want the vacation we think $1 million will give us. We want the freedom we think $1 million will give us. We want the peace that we think $1 million will give us. We want the opportunities that we think $1 million will give us. You don't need that $1 million, and most of us don't want it. We're going to talk about attaching value to our vision statements and the why. But remember, when you're writing these down, you don't have to have any more than you have right now to take a step towards your vision in every one of these areas. Here's another question along the same lines is, what would you want to accomplish? What would you want to do? Who would you want to be if your dad was Bill Gates or Warren Buffett, worth 40-something billion dollars each? And I also found out that Carlos Slim Helu is a Mexican billionaire. He's been up and down above these guys for the last couple of years here in North America and indeed the world. So what would you do if you had that? But I want you to check your $1 million question. Your $1 million question, the answer to your $1 million question, I want you to check it with these three things. Number one, look at it. Will it benefit other people? Will it benefit other people? Will your vision for your life, your $1 million vision, your $1 million answer to your $1 million question, will it benefit others? Second, does it utilize you as the amazing gift that you are? Does it utilize you as the amazing gift that you are? So first, on the answer to your $1 million question, does it benefit others? Does it utilize you as a great gift? Is it possible for you to engage in it for years to come, possibly decades to come? Is it something you can become great at, amazing at? Is it something you got up to do that you'll want to do 5 and 6 days a week? Okay, so when we talk vision, we're talking these three components. We're talking it's good for people, it's designed to fit you, and it's utilizing you as the beautiful gift that you are, and it's possible to do long term. So I don't know that anybody did this. So if you wrote my vision, if I had $1 million, I would golf every day of the week. That's not a vision. If it is, it's a poor vision. It's a short-sighted vision. It's basically an accomplishable goal that when you hit retirement, you could do it. If you write down there, I want to live on the beach. You can do that without $1 million. You can leave your job, your house, your family, and go live on the beach. You can. There's nothing stopping you from doing that. You can't maybe live in the lifestyle you do now. When we set vision, it's deeply connected to our heart. It's deeply connected to who we're made. That's the vision we're looking for. We're not looking for a vision that I want something safe and I want something that's easy and I want something that I don't have to like work towards. We want something that we can put our hand to and make the world a better place. So when we talk vision here, that's what we're talking about. I'm gonna have to skip something. Let's go all the way to the speed vision casting. The next page, thank you. Page 7. Oh, in my notes, it's a long ways away. Okay. Let's see. All right. So vision is the most difficult step we take, because what vision does is it takes that dream, that intangible, and has to make it tangible. All right? I'm going to write you a vision that I have. It's not every vision, but it kind of encapsulate everything I would think of with family and friends. I see me and my family and friends having meals together, laughing, sharing life, building deeper relationships over a good dinner. To me, that's life when it comes to friendship. I want that. I want meals with friends, with people. We have a table that's way too big for our living area. And what's funny, we love this table. And We've never used the two leaves that's in it, and it barely fits in our dining room already. We got eight massive chairs that go around it. And when we have people over, we don't have 30 people over or 40. We have six or eight that fit around that table. And we sit there, and I sit there, and I love it. I don't even have to talk. I love that. That's a vision for me. But you know what's interesting? Vision is your preferred future. You can have that vision and have no friends. You can say, I want $1 million in the bank and have not a dime. You can say, I want kids and not be married. Vision is what you see in your future. It can be completely different than what you've ever experienced. It can be completely opposite of what you've experienced. It's not based on who you are, where you are, or what you have. Vision is based on what's in your heart. So vision, and we never want to say, well, I'm just a dreamer. Because when you say, I'm just a dreamer, you just say, I'm just not going anywhere. Okay? We want to be a visionary. And visionaries take these dreams and they put words to them. Okay? So this is the most difficult part that we have, is this vision. We'll work on vision tonight and a little bit next week also. So on this page 7, I'm going to give you 3 or 4 minutes, and in one sentence, okay, I want you to say, I see myself. I see myself. Not like I want to be a little bit better in 2015, but I see myself in 2015, and in each area of these, write something. I see myself with my friends and family like this. Go ahead and start. If you have a question, you can ask a question. If you don't know, like on a certain area, you don't understand it, you can ask me. If you're in ministry, use number 7, I see my career in business, as your ministry. And separate it out from your spiritual life.
Can you say that again?
On number 7 where it says, I see my career in business, just cross, if you're in ministry, just cross that out and put ministry. But separate it out from number 6. So your personal vision for your spiritual life is separate right now from your vision for your ministry. All right, you got just over 1 minute. All right, now you have 1 minute. All right, go ahead and finish up in the next 10, 15 seconds. And you can go back and you can go back and clarify these and change these, okay? But I want to get your, we want to get your first initial. The very last Wednesday that we meet, we'll have refined each of these.
Good evening. Woo! I'm excited to be here tonight. One of the reasons why I'm so excited is that resistance is something that's very dear to my heart. It's something that I think about every day. It's something that I talk about every day. It's something I read about every day and something I fight every day. So you can see page 9 is blank. And I'm not going to give you much to write down, but my goal tonight is to give you a clear picture of what resistance is. I wanted to have a picture up here so you could know what type of resistance I was talking about, but I couldn't find one, and because there's two main types of resistance, and that's electrical resistance and then army, like they were the last resistance, and neither of those are the ones we're talking about tonight. So I'm going to start with three definitions of resistance, and the first one's by a guy named Stephen Pressfield, who first coined the phrase in his book, The War of Art, and he defines resistance as an energy field radiating from a work in potential. It's a repelling force. It's negative. Its aim is to shove us away, distract us, and prevent us from doing our work. And the part I want to highlight there is this work in potential. I didn't really know what that was, but as an accountant, you know, we have something called work in progress. And that work in progress can't be completed because it's waiting on direct action from the client or from the accountant. And so that's how I kind of see this work in potential. It's where you want to go in your life. It's who you want to be. It's your goals that only gets out of the potential phase when you start to put in that direct action. The second definition is by a guy named Seth Godin. He's has the number one online marketing blog, and he defines resistance as the confused and angry noise in our head that shows up whenever we put our creativity on the line. And now this, when we put our creativity on the line, that's the same thing as this work in potential. It's when we let other people in the world see our art. It's when we do something that might be a little out of the norm for us. And the second part I want to highlight is the first part, the confused and angry noise. This kind of gives us a good picture of how resistance comes about. It's this unseen force. It's this energy field. It's this this pressure that builds up within us whenever we try to do something new and whenever we try to put our creativity on the line. And it often is confused and angry, but it doesn't always have to be. It could be confused and afraid. Your pressure that builds up could be you thinking about all your past failures when it comes to that one area. And now this third definition is my definition. And that's what I want you, as you're writing down, begin to develop your own definition, because we really need that personal definition in order to recognize the form that resistance takes in our own life. So my definition is, resistance is the thing within all of us that keeps us from bringing our art and our passion into the world. And now, that art and that passion, that's the same thing as putting our creativity on the line. It's the same thing as the work and potential. And one of the things that was very important for me when I think about resistance every day is I had to make sure I remembered that everybody is facing it. Right now, as I'm talking to you, I'm fighting the resistance. Every one of us had to face a little level of resistance to come out here tonight. And so that was very important to me, to know that everyone's fighting it every day for the rest of time. So next, I'm going to move on to a couple examples of resistance. And resistance is the reason you check your emails 50 times a day. Resistance is the reason your whole office is clean, but the phone call you needed to make still is waiting to be made. Resistance is the reason you avoid failure at all cost. Resistance is the reason you won't expose your gift or your talent to those around you. Resistance is the reason you keep from being vulnerable. Resistance is the reason you won't seek feedback. And now there's a core concept here that I want you to write down, and that is, resistance wants to keep you hidden. And, you know, resistance is not wanting you picking up the guitar after a year of not playing it. If you love to sing, resistance doesn't want you to go down to the local venue and perform and get and expose your art into the world. It hates that. It hates when people are unique. It hates when people are creative. It hates when people pursue their passion in their art. And so here's the second thing I want you to write down. Resistance does not want you to give your uniqueness to those around you. Resistance does not want you to give your uniqueness to those around you. Next, and this is one of the things I want you to write down as well. So I have a title, Properties of Resistance. There's many properties, but I picked out five that I thought were super important. And I'm going to list them and then give a brief explanation. First one, it's unseen. Second one, it's adaptable. Third one, it's immortal. Fourth one, it hates creativity. Fifth one, it's deceitful/cunning. So this first unseen is that's the force, that's the pressure, that's the resistance is something that's intangible, which ties into it being very adaptable. You never know which angle resistance is going to come from. So one minute resistance could look like one thing. The next minute, it could come at a totally different aside. The third one is resistance and is immortal. It cannot die. As long as you keep putting your creativity on the line, as long as you keep pursuing your passions and your art, resistance will always be there to try and keep you back and push back at you. The fourth one, resistance hates creativity. Like I said, it hates that uniqueness. It hates that art. It hates that passion. It hates that thing inside of you that only you have to give this world. And the fifth one, deceitful and cunning. You know, I wrote this down here because I'm always amazed when I think I've beaten resistance in a certain area. And then a week later, I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, I just lost to it this whole time. And I put cunning because it's very sneaky. It's very good at getting you to lie to yourself. It's very good at getting you to think that you've won, think that you've, that it's quieted down, that you're doing everything you can to be creative. You're doing everything you can to push towards what you want. So during the week, go ahead and try to recognize that voice, recognize that pressure that is resistance. As you're creative, as you're pursuing who you are and who you want to be, continue to build that definition. Because everybody's resistance takes a different shape and a different form. And next week we're talking about how to recognize your own personal form of resistance. So go throughout your week, be cognizant of that, but most of all, keep pursuing your art and keep being unique.